This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump announced the United States will suspend any and all travel from Europe for the next 30 days in an attempt to stop the spread of the coronavirus. Speaking Wednesday night from the Oval Office, Mr. Trump said the new restrictions would take effect Friday.
To keep new cases from entering our shores, we will be suspending all travel from Europe to the United States for the next 30 days. The new rules will go into effect Friday at midnight.
The president did not list specific countries, but said the restrictions would apply to all of Europe and would include trade and transportation. He said there will be exemptions for Americans who have undergone appropriate screenings. The restrictions do not apply to Britain. With the U.S. stock market in free fall, Mr. Trump said that he would take emergency action to provide financial relief for workers who are ill, quarantined, or caring for others with the illness. Tax payments would be deferred for businesses and individuals affected without penalties or interest. He said the Small Business Administration would provide capital to firms affected by the virus. The president urged all Americans to abide by the recommendations from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Each of us has a role to play in defeating this virus. Wash your hands, clean often used surfaces, cover your face and mouth if you sneeze or cough, and most of all, if you are sick or not feeling well, stay home.
The president's action came after the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus outbreak a global pandemic and after the U.S. stock market plunged by more than 5%. Again, President Trump announcing that the United States is, in fact, suspending any and all travel from Europe for the next 30 days. This is in an attempt to stop the spread of the coronavirus. He makes the announcement Wednesday night from the Oval Office. Find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. More than 2 months after a U.S. airstrike killed an Iranian general, U.S. lawmakers are finally sending new ground rules to the president. AP's Mike Rossi.
The House has passed a bipartisan measure to limit President Donald Trump's authority to launch military operations against Iran. On a vote of 227 to 186, the House gave final legislative approval to the measure, sending it to the president's desk, where Trump has promised a veto. The resolution, sponsored by Senator Tim Kaine, a Democrat from Virginia, says Trump must get congressional approval before engaging in further military action against Iran. Representative Michael McCaul of Texas, the top Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, called the War Powers measure divisive and irresponsible. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders said Wednesday he is staying in the race for the U.S. Democratic presidential nomination, even as he acknowledged he is losing voters to former Vice President Joe Biden on the question of which one of them has the better chance to defeat Republican President Donald Trump in November. Biden won 4 of 6 primaries Tuesday, including the day's biggest prize, Michigan. That is the country's auto manufacturing hub in the U.S. heartland. Sanders captured only the small upper Midwest state of North Dakota while leading in the western state of Washington, with votes still being counted. Sanders, a self-declared Democratic socialist, said he looks forward to debating Biden so people can see which candidate is best to beat President Trump.
On Sunday night, in the first one-on-one debate of this campaign, the American people will have the opportunity to see which candidate is best positioned to accomplish that goal.
And 4 more states vote next Tuesday: Ohio, Florida, Illinois, and Arizona, all with sizable delegations to the party's national convention. Two Americans and a coalition service member are dead and a dozen more wounded after a barrage of rockets slammed into a military base north of Baghdad. According to the U.S. and Iraqi officials, that attack was carried out by militants operating a modified truck to launch rockets. A U.S. official told VOA the truck managed to fire about 30 rockets, 18 of which hit the base. U.S. Central Command spokesman Captain Bill Urban confirmed to VOA that 2 U.S. service members, along with a number member of the U.S.-led coalition, were killed. Media reports said the 3rd service member was from Britain. 12 more people, including both U.S. and coalition troops and a contractor, were injured. U.S. military officials said it was too early to assign blame for the attack and that the investigation is still ongoing. More at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Thank you. Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The World Health Organization declares the coronavirus a pandemic.
Pandemic is not a word to use lightly or carelessly. It's a word that, if misused, can cause unreasonable fear.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is the Director General of the WHO. Officials at Kenya's National Transfusion Services are being accused of stealing and selling donated blood to Somalia. The UN says a holistic approach is needed to counter violent extremism in Africa. And Malawi's two main opposition parties have agreed to form an electoral alliance, but who will be the standard bearer?
I think we have said before that if we are going into an alliance and we start putting the issue of positions, who is going to be number one, who is going to be number two, ahead of the discussions, I think we are going to miss the point.
Joseph Chidante Malunga is the spokesperson for Malawi's UTM opposition party. Gambian President Adama Barrow fires his army chief of defense staff, and a critic of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni uses her time in prison to write a book. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The World Health Organization has declared the coronavirus a pandemic after weeks of viewing what it calls the alarming spread of the disease globally. The WHO says there now are more than 118,000 cases in 114 countries, including 4,291 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says his agency has been assessing this outbreak around the clock and is deeply concerned about the severity and the alarming levels of inaction.
We have therefore made the assessment that COVID-19 can be characterized as a pandemic. Pandemic is not a word to use lightly or carelessly. It's a word that, if misused, can cause unreasonable fear or unjustified acceptance that the fight is over, leading to unnecessary suffering and death.
Tedros says there's been a 13-fold increase in the number of COVID-19 cases outside China, and the number of affected countries has tripled. He warns the number of cases, deaths, and countries will rise in the weeks ahead. He says this is no time to give into fear or panic. On the contrary, he says this is the time to take urgent and aggressive action.
We are convinced that although this is the first coronavirus to be labeled as pandemic, at the same time, we believe that it will be the first also to be able to be contained or controlled.
While multiple countries are infected with COVID-19, Tedros notes that more than 90% of cases are in just four countries, and two of them, China and the Republic of Korea, have turned the outbreak around and have significantly declining epidemics. He says countries should employ a comprehensive or blended approach using both containment and mitigation measures to tackle the pandemic. WHO officials say employing fundamental public health measures can successfully bring this deadly disease to an end. These measures include aggressively hunting down all cases, tracing contacts and testing those individuals, isolating patients, and providing treatment and care in hospitals for people who are severely infected. Tedros says all countries can still change the course of this pandemic if they fight hard to suppress the virus and stop transmission. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Officials at Kenya's National Transfusion Services are being accused of stealing and selling donated blood to Somalia and other neighboring countries. The Kenyan Health Ministry has asked the Director of Criminal Investigation to investigate the Transfusion Department, which has been accused of colluding with cartels to sell blood outside Kenya. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, most hospitals across the country appealed for blood recently, citing a shortage in blood banks.
Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Wednesday, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe acknowledged receiving reports on the illegal selling of blood outside the country while patients ran short of blood in hospitals. Mutahi says the investigation by Director of Criminal Investigation should ensure the cartels involved are arrested and charged.
There is a major criminal cartel that is involved in stealing of blood. We hear there is even some blood from Kenya that is apparently appearing in Somalia and other countries. To unearth what is happening to business, to some business people who are also part of that cartel. Some hospitals are also involved in that cartel. So what we intend and what we have asked for is a full-blown investigation.
A case opened on Wednesday last week is seeking to find out roles played out by Kenya National Blood Transfusion Service officers in creating an artificial blood shortage in the country by illegally selling blood meant to be supplied to Kenyan hospitals. Mr. Kagwe says the ministry intends to put up an ICT system that will monitor blood usage from the person donating to the patient receiving blood.
All right, to investigate and arrest those found culpable in this whole menace. When you have got as little blood as we have, we operate on need basis. You know, where it is most needed, that's where it goes. But you can see that that is not a solution. That is a desperate measure. We also intend to install an ICT system that can track and trace blood so that blood that is donated in one area or by an individual can be tracked all the way up to the end user of that blood.
In a statement dated March 6, 2020, and copied to the Director of Criminal Investigation, George Kinoti, the Health Ministry blamed the blood shortage on the cartel said to be operating within and outside the country. Concerns over blood shortage in the country were raised by most hospitals since last year, with the blame directed to Kenya National Blood Transfusion Service. Health Ministry Chief Administration Secretary Mercy Mwangangi said that the few pints in the blood banks are hard to distribute across the country.
And these 164,000 pints have to be distributed across, you know, nearly 8,000 facilities. You can imagine they wouldn't be enough. Ensuring that the database is able to disaggregate for us the different blood types that exist, because some blood shortages are in certain blood types, the rarer ones. So we have, you know, that band of and cohort of donors who we are able to work with. Issues that are highly articulated in a bill that we are working on in the Ministry of Health, a bill that we see the reform of the blood spaces.
However, the Kenya National Blood Transfusion Service, which has been Kenya's only blood bank, has cited lack of funding as their challenge. This is after USAID withdrew its services from blood drive donations and management. Kenya's health sector has been blamed for negligence, selling of newborn babies, and now blood trafficking. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
In Malawi, the United Transformation Movement, the UTM party of Vice President Saulos Chilima, says it has concluded talks to form an alliance with the opposition Malawi Congress Party of Lazarus Chakwera ahead of the court order May 19 presidential election. The parties have agreed to field a single candidate against President Peter Mutharika. The two parties are expected to sign the agreement on March 19. However, which of the two leaders, Chilima or Chakwera, is going to be the standard bearer of the new alliance? UTM spokesperson Joseph Chidante Malunga says the issue of who should lead the alliance will come later. For now, he says the two leaders should first focus their energy on what they would do for the Malawian people.
The UTM party, through its National Executive Committee, ratified the resolution that we should go in an alliance or in partnership with Malawi Congress Party in forthcoming elections.
So what are the details?
Well, at the moment, I will not be able to tell you the details because we're still fine-tuning. But I think what is important is that the National Executive Committee for UTM has ratified the resolution that, yes, we should go in an alliance with Malawi Congress Party.
I guess one key question that most Malawians may be wanting to know is this one. Who is going to be the alliance's standard-bearer? That's the key question.
Yeah, I know that is a quick question, but I think we have said before that if we are going into an alliance and we start putting the issue of positions, who is going to be number one, who is going to be number two, ahead of the discussions, I think we are going to miss the point. What we want to do is to look at how we can bail Malawi out of the mess that we are in right now. Once we have done that, then we'll see who is going to be best fit to do what. Then we'll put people in the correct positions to do that. And that will lead into who's going to be the leader. But we can't put the issue of leadership right now. We think we should look at what is it that we need for Malawi, and then later on talk about who's going to handle a particular issue.
Why has it become necessary now for these two parties to finally decide they want to come together?
Well, everyone knows that in this country we are divided, although not many people talk about it, but we know that we are divided on a tribal line, and so much is happening in our country, nepotism and things like that. So the only way to rectify this situation is for parties to come together and show a sign of solidarity and show Malawians that even though we can differ in language, even though we can differ in tribes, but we are still one people as one Malawi. So one way to do that is to make sure that the parties should come together.
As you know, President Mutharika and the Elections Commission have filed appeals about this Constitutional Court ruling. So are you certain that the elections will take place on May 19th?
Well, as we speak right now, we have a Constitutional Court ruling, and there's nothing to the contrary. And we are working with that. We know that they have appealed. It is within their rights. They can do that. But there's nothing stopping us from preparing and going ahead with our programs, because there's nothing, as we speak, that the contrary of the ruling of the Constitutional Court. So we'll go by what the Constitutional Court has said.
Mr. Chakwara has said that he was going to join a protest today, Thursday. What is the plan here for the protest? Are you also going to be involved?
Yes. As UTM, we have always said that we are going to support any move that is designed to liberate our country, that is designed to speak about the ills of our country. So as UTM, we are going to support. Who is going to attend? I may not be able to give you the details right now, but I think what we should know is that we are going to support the demonstrations.
Joseph Chidante Malunga is the spokesperson for Malawi's opposition UTM party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 12, Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. The UN Security Council urged governments on Wednesday to take a holistic approach on combating the evolving threat from terrorism and violent extremism in Africa. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
Al-Shabaab, Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram. Some are homegrown. Others, like ISIL, have been driven out of Syria and Iraq and are finding their way to Africa in search of havens and recruits. Fragile states with porous borders are especially vulnerable, particularly those in the so-called Arc of Instability, which stretches across the Sahara and Sahel. Tunisia's UN envoy, Tarek Ladeb, pointed to the war in Libya as one of the driving forces of regional violence.
The ongoing war in Libya, always fueled by foreign players who keep sending weapons and fighters, is feeding this terrorist dynamics on the continent and continue to reinforce terrorist groups and to affect the situation in Africa, especially in the Sahel region.
And it's not just disaffected and unemployed men who are being radicalized and recruited. Women are, too. In some instances, women have been recruited as suicide bombers. UN political chief Rosemary DiCarlo told council members that countries cannot effectively address terrorism without dealing with its root causes.
The threat of terrorism is often a consequence of development, humanitarian, human rights, and security challenges that terrorist groups seek to exploit. Security and military solutions are thus not sufficient.
Too often, governments respond to extremism rather than acting early to prevent it. The UN says that for each dollar invested in prevention, the cost of conflict is reduced by more than $16 in the long term. U.S. Ambassador Kelly Craft said Washington is engaged with partners across Africa to train military and police forces, strengthen criminal justice systems, and cut the flow of funds to terrorists.
The United States is working to build the capacity of our African partners to prevent, detect, deter, disrupt, and prosecute terrorists across the continent. The bottom line here is that terrorism can be beaten. This is a fight governments and citizens can win.
The Security Council stressed the need to continue and improve support to African states at the national, sub-regional, and regional levels, including through specialized capacity building, training, sharing of best practices, and facilitating socioeconomic development. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Gambian President Adama Barrow has fired his Army Chief of Defense Staff, Lieutenant General Massena Kintes. Firing was announced on Wednesday in a statement issued by the President's office. Reporter Pandere Umbai has been following the story from Raleigh, North Carolina, and has this report.
The Army Chief of Defense Staff, Massena Kintes, has finally been fired. No reason was given for his removal. A statement from the president's office said the president had acted on powers conferred on him by the Constitution to relieve Kintes of his duties. Kintes has been replaced by his deputy, Major General Yankuba Drame. Ibu Jallow is a retired Gambian Army captain. Jallow is also the spokesperson for the former Gambian military junta.
This was well overdue. We have been raising this issue for a long time. We have highlighted the issues that are implicated with his hiring as the commander of the Chief of Defense Staff, because this is a man whose career was sponsored and patronized by the former dictatorship, Yahya Jammeh.
Kintes' removal followed damning revelations made by the U.S.-based Gambian online newspaper, Freedom Newspaper, in which the paper had exposed allegations of corruption at the Army. The Army chief had been traveling on expensive business class tickets, claiming 9 days' per diem allowance during his recent trip to the United Nations, among other disturbing allegations.
It was very, very, very unwise for the coalition government to retain Massena Kintes' services as the Chief of Defense Staff.
Pas Samba Jau is a Gambian political analyst. Jau says allegations of corruption shouldn't be brushed under the carpet.
Corruption should not be encouraged in a country. So if it is alleged that he was corrupt, I hope that they will get to the bottom of it.
The army under Kintes' leadership had witnessed a massive turnover in recent months. Soldiers have been leaving the force because of low staff morale and poor working conditions. Analyst Pas Samba Jau is of the view that Kintes' departure would facilitate a proper security reform.
Well, I hope it means something better, because definitely if you look at the Gambian Armed Forces, it's like the reforms that we were expecting to happen didn't take place. It looks like Massena Kintes, who was acting like pretty much a co-president in that country with his convoy that everybody was complaining about, that was the only thing that he was famous for. There was nothing tangible that anybody could look at and say, you know, what he is doing to at least give us a more professional army.
Notwithstanding, Joe is optimistic that Kintes' successor would transform the army into a more professional security outfit.
Yankuba Drame, he seems to be a very level-headed guy. I hope that at least he would take the concerns of the army seriously.
Major Lamin Sanyang is the spokesperson for the Gambia Armed Forces. Sanyang says he was not in the position to confirm as to whether Kintes' removal has to do with an alleged corruption or not. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, this is Pandirimbay in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Ugandan poet Stella Nyanzi was released in February after spending more than a year in prison for a post she made on Facebook that insulted President Yoweri Museveni. A defiant Nyanzi used her time behind bars to write a book and is inspiring others to use poetry to express their political opinions. But as Halima Athumani reports from Kampala, Uganda's public prosecutor plans to appeal Nyanzi's acquittal.
Before her release in February, Ugandan poet Stella Nyanzi was serving 18 months in prison for cyber-harassing Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. She was convicted last year for a 2018 Facebook post that used graphic language to say she wished Museveni had died as a fetus for what she says he has done to Uganda and its people. Nyanzi says being in jail gave her time to write a fresh book of poems aptly titled No Roses From My Mouth.
I sit on the meager prison bedding spread on the floor, lean against the wall, pull out my pen and notebook and write whatever I please. Ah, what freedom to write. Although my writings are often confiscated by prison staff during sport ward searches and routine body searches, I insist on writing as a form of resistance.
After her conviction, some Ugandan writers were wary of offending the government with lewd comments. Nyanzi's supporters responded to the chilling effect on free speech by applauding her use of prose to take on politics. Danson Kahiana, a senior lecturer in the Department of Literature at Makerere University, says he wrote a book that he decided not to publish because he does not have the courage Nyanzi has.
She's our hero. I think we shall celebrate her. One day, there will come a time when we shall say, Stella, you are the reason we are better governed, because your fighting has given us all these beautiful fruits.
Ugandan authorities repeatedly have detained Nyanzi for criticizing Museveni, who has been president for 34 years. Although a high court acquitted the poet of cyber harassment, Uganda's public prosecutor insists Nyanzi's online post was illegal. Jacqueline Okui is spokeswoman for the Directorate of Uganda's public prosecutor.
As a result, we have appealed to the Court of Appeal against the acquittals, and we intend to peruse the record of proceedings and the judgment and come up with grounds of appeal, which we shall argue to prove our case.
Hopeful poets like Daphne Arinda are learning what it means to speak their minds in Museveni's Uganda.
So I am terrified, I can't lie, but I also have the confidence and also the inner will to know that if I'm strong about something, then I can pursue it to its end.
Meanwhile, Nyanzi herself has become the subject of poetry.
A reject of the day's civilization, they want to sieve her, throw out the chaff that her golden crown, wild hairs tangled in cotton fabric debris, armpits musky after a day's work, nails darkened from a walk amongst trees. That's her. That's her. Ask no more who she is, who she is.
For now, Nyanzi lives at her residence in Wakiso District, awaiting her next court hearing, which is not yet scheduled, but is sure to come. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The security situation in the Sahel region of Africa is rapidly deteriorating, U.S. officials warned. Terror attacks claimed by Islamist militants against civilians and military targets have particularly risen in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, three countries in the Sahel region. The Sahel is a semi-arid region that encompasses an area south of the Sahara Desert, spanning 10 countries from Senegal in the west to Eritrea in the east. In 2019, more than 2,000 civilians were killed by fighting and violence in the area. Since the beginning of 2020, in Burkina Faso alone, 4,000 people a day are being displaced by the violence, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. In Malawi, the United Transformation Movement, the UTM party of Vice President Saulos Chilima, says it has concluded talks to form an alliance with the opposition Malawi Congress Party of Lazarus Chakwera ahead of the court order May 19 presidential election. The parties have agreed to field a single candidate against President Peter Mutharika. The two parties are also expected to sign the agreement on March 19. However, which of the two leaders, Chilima or Chakwera, is going to be the standard bearer of the new alliance? UTM spokesperson Joseph Chidanta Malunga says the issue of who should lead the alliance will come later. For now, he says the two leaders should first focus their energy on what they would do for the Malawian people. Officials at Kenya's National Transfusion Services are being accused of stealing and selling donated blood to Somalia and other neighboring countries. The Kenyan Health Ministry has asked the Director of Criminal Investigation to investigate the Transfusion Department, which has been accused of colluding with cartel to sell blood outside Kenya. That is it for this Thursday, March 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Bate in Washington.
VOA Africa in Juba is moving to a new position on the dial. Beginning next Wednesday, March 18th, you can find us at 93.6 FM. A better signal and a better sound, bringing you your favorite music, news, sports, and more. Our flagship show, South Sudan in Focus, provides listeners with up-to-the-minute updates of news, reports, features, and interviews. VOA Africa in Juba, your best source for news and entertainment.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, 25 years ago, the international community convened in an attempt to create a world where men and women are equal. A discussion on women's equality on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.